Florida, so I ended up driving up. Were you on spring break too?
Yeah, we were at mountains up in Colorado.
Oh, okay.
Were you down there for spring break once you started?
Yeah, I make my living doing baseball stuff, so.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. I don't really speak to my kids, so I just
went.
How old are they? Oh, my youngest is a junior in high school, and the oldest is in college. Hi. Nice to meet you.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah. Met once before at my older son's confirmation at Mary King of Peace.
Would you like a water or a coffee?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah. I grabbed something at McDonald's, so. Where? You want
to? Wherever you like to sit.
Okay. So I've got your email about kind of the constraints of the meeting, and I just wanted to give you a sense of some of the things that I'd like to talk about. There's no water for me. But I appreciate, you know, your offer.
Can you do with the prep?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Well, first of all, thank you for coming.
Yeah.
And I know that because I met with many other victims, that can be a challenging time.
Right.
So my hope with everybody I met is that even if we can't have healing with the church because of what has happened, there can be healing in your own life with the God who created you and who loves you.
Right.
And I've found over the years that when we focus, you know, all kinds of people focus on some other things, but I like to focus on your relationship with the church, your relationship with the Lord, anything I can do to help that. Because I know that when something traumatic happens in a person's life, that can sometimes be disruptive as well.
Well, I've actually, one of the things that's helped me is and it's funny that this is happening at this time of year. The thing that's emboldened me and empowered me is the image of Jesus Christ entering Jerusalem on Palm Sunday to a certain and known fate and doing it anyway. And if he can do that, then I can do this.
Well, actually, and that ties into today's readings rather powerfully. First is, because I appreciate every day of the sisters.
Right.
First is from the book of Daniel, where they started out thinking, well, they're just fine.
Mm-hmm.
But they reached that point in the Old Testament where they said, you know, we've made some mistakes. We've sinned.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to the gospel where it talks about the unjust steward. He's forgiven, but he won't forgive anybody else. And
right.
I said, as you just highlighted, I said, all of us have to remember that we didn't deserve it, but God opened the gates of heaven for us and made it possible for us to have a relationship. And as I told the sisters, that's true in a religious community, it's true in marriage, it's true in priesthood, it's true in the archdiocese. So
right.
I agree with you. It's a very special time, and I believe a special day.
Right, right. Well, so what I wanted to do, I'm not sure if we've got a half an hour or an hour, what the time frame is like.
I think we have a half an hour.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's understandable. I wanted to make sure that you understand kind of my situation and the situation of the other survivors and what's going on for us.
And I think that that's especially important because I didn't come here until 2009.
Right, right.
So lots of things, you know, that happened in the past, I don't know about.
Right, and my story kind of extends before that, so. That's one of the things I wanted to make sure of, because I wanted to make sure that you understand what's going on, and I want to make sure that you understand what's going on, because I'm not sure that everybody understands what's going on exactly and what's been done by certain people.
And really, most important, what's going on in your life.
Right. Well, that I, you know, fundamentally, I need help. I don't know where I'm going to get it. You know, financial help, which means paying for therapy, medication, food, that kind of stuff. I checked my bank balance, and I've got about $25 to my name. Bankrupt, divorced, you know, my kids will barely speak to me. Well, and I'll go through some of that. Let me just kind of go through this outline. First, what I wanted to do was make sure that you guys understood about Cardinal Dolan, who I knew as Father Dolan. So I first came forward in the Aisha Sultan piece, April of 18, and had my own story. This is a direct message I received from a guy via Twitter later on that evening that's consistent with my story. I know who he is. He's not doing very well. He won't get back in touch with me. But talking about, you know, Father Dolan knew what was going on. He saw stuff. I don't know whether he told Monsignor Flavin or what, but I just want to make sure you guys understand that Dolan knew what was going on. He saw it with his own eyes. Flavin saw what was going on.
Is this the Flavin who became the bishop?
No, this is the brother. This is Connie Flavin, not Gavin not Bishop Flavin. This is Monsignor Flavin, not Bishop Flavin. And this is Immaculata 70. Well, for Dolan, it would be 76, and that's actually where I met Father Dolan. My first memory is him preaching on Mark 8, 22 to 26, where Jesus heals the blind man in two steps. We kind of got that as we interpreted that as, you know, even everybody makes mistakes. Even Jesus Christ in human form didn't get everything right the first time. That was kind of the message that I remember from that.
You were how old then?
I was in third grade. I would have been probably nine or so at Immaculata.
You have a very good memory. I don't know if I remember.
The reason I remember it is because Father Dolan chose me to play the role of Jesus. So we just did a little skit and we reenacted it. This was during religion class. Father Dolan came to our class and we talked about, I guess it was the reading for that day or something.
I had the same experience, but I had to watch the television show, I forget the bishop, used to have a television show like every Tuesday night. And we had to watch it, and then the priest would come in the next day and say, well, what did the senior say? And then we had to come.
Right. But so I wanted to, you know, this is, I have concerns about Cardinal Dolan in terms of what he knew. And then it was, I ended up talking to him. He was the person who called me back in 2002 when the Archdiocese put out the appeal saying, you know, if you know anything about Father Valentine, please come forward. So I called in, and then by then he was Bishop Dolan, called me back, and we talked. And it was a little unusual that he was allowed to investigate stuff that he was involved in, but, you know, whatever. And this is actually, just in case you weren't aware of the fact that he was handling calls, this is another person who called in at the same time frame about Father Valentine. And I actually know at least three of us called in to the Archdiocese with information about Father Valentine.
Obviously, I wasn't there then, so
right.
I don't know a lot of this, but did the diocese ask people, invite people to call in?
Yeah, they put up an appeal, and so a piece ran in the New York Times exposing Father Valentine and the three Scorfina brothers. And then the Archdiocese, to their credit, put out a call saying, if you have any information, please call us and call Jennifer Joyce, the circuit attorney. So I called Jennifer Joyce, never heard back from them, and I called in. And then, like, the next day, Bishop Dolan called me back. Hey, Chris, Tim Dolan, Bishop Dolan, how are you doing? And So I told him some of my memories. He ended up telling me that they didn't mean anything, that Father Valentine couldn't have done anything. And then I ended up meeting with a woman who I suspect was Nancy Brown, who was the assistance coordinator at the time.
I don't know if she was or not. She was probably somebody we referred to.
Well, and that was, it was, she was kind of external, and that's how Dolan said, you know, we've got someone that we, you know, who knows, who's knowledgeable about this subject that we refer people to. I actually know the address, and it was 141 North Merrimack in Suite 23 or 25. So, and there's a third, so I reported at the same time as this person, and then there was a third person who reported at the end of March 2002. I actually know him. I've been talking to him. Another thing that you should know of that's out there is Bishop Finn, Father Finn, was from St. Louis, and I was actually talking about my story. I went to St. Louis U High, and we have kind of these informal reunions around Christmas, and a guy told me a story about Bishop Finn that happened. It was the same kind of thing, you know, taking kids up to the room for under some guise or another. And he told me a story that Bishop Finn did that when he was Father Finn. I'm trying to get this guy to come forward and talk about it, but he's reluctant to right now. But just so you know, a guy told me a scary story about, or a troubling story about Bishop, then Father Finn. And the other thing is my abuse started in face-to-face confession, and I just wanted to make sure you understood that and make sure that that's not going on anymore, so that it was, the way it was set up at Immaculata was just two chairs in the cry room with the door closed and the shades pulled. And I want to make sure, just for the sake of kids, that that's not happening anymore. That there's some, I mean, they do face-to-face at Mary Queen of Peace, but what they did is they took the old dark, scary room and then just lowered the wall. So it's you and the priest, but there's a barrier in between you.
Yeah, what I did at the cathedral in St. Paul's when I was there is we took the old confessional,
mm-hmm.
and we cut out a big space.
Right.
Put a door in it.
Right.
So if the person wants to open the door.
Oh, right. But there's still a physical barrier there.
Right.
Right. And that's the right...
For everybody's protection.
Right. No, just let's keep everybody safe that way.
Right. Okay.
But I've seen pictures on the internet of stuff of there where it may be that there's still parishes who are still doing the two chairs in a room, and that's scary because that's how it first started with me and how it started with another guy that I know. The third guy who came forward in March 2002.
Actually, when I was a young priest, they used to put two chairs in the sanctuary.
Right.
And Kevin would go up and sit in one chair, and the priest was in the other chair. The other priest was over on the other side of the sanctuary.
Well, but that's, you know, out in the open.
Right.
You know, that's the right way. Right. Well, I know at Immaculata, I don't know whether they still do confession in those rooms, but they've at least removed the curtains from the cry room. So, at a minimum, there isn't the closed door and the drawn curtains, which was caused problems. The USCCB has made the promise of assistance quarters. I just want you to know that I was never offered the services or told the existence of an assistance coordinator. And this gets into kind of our stuff. I don't know what Hangen has told people, but...
What is your understanding of what an assistant coordinator does?
Well, that they're supposed to, you know, help set up, you know, arrange for treatment and help pay for treatment.
Okay. So, typically, what Carol does, and you have
right.
to talk
yeah.
to Carol.
Yeah.
So, anybody in the diocese is really free to call her. You have her number.
Right.
So, and what she does is link people to therapists if they do not have one.
Right.
So that's kind of her role for us. She's not necessarily somebody who's going to make the determination if the therapy would be paid for. That all happens through the review board.
Right.
So, you know, I can't, again, comment on what happened up until this point, but certainly you have, you can call Carol at any point in time
right.
if you want.
But well, like I said, I'm bankrupt and I'm paying for this. Well, my parents are paying for this stuff, plus the person is giving me a discount. So my personal situation, bankrupt, I haven't declared bankruptcy, but, you know, I had cancer. I was fighting cancer at the same time I was trying to get help from the Archdiocese. and I've got thousands of dollars that I owe to the SLU hospital. Malignant melanoma. I've got a scar on my arm to prove it. Ostracized by my kids and my ex-wife's family. My kids barely speak to me. Shunned at Mary Queen of Peace. And that was, you know, if you want to help me, there are two things you could do. Well, basically, you could admit that it happened, or in some form admit that it happened. This meeting is an implicit acknowledgement that it happened, but an explicit acknowledgement would help me, would allow people at Mary Queen of Peace to talk to me, and I'll get into why that's an issue. So you emailed me about a year ago in this email. And there are a couple things that you say in there that I just, here's kind of an annotated version. And I'm very frustrated, but I don't know who's told who what. So I'm just going to kind of go through this. You chose to litigate. I didn't choose to litigate. I was forced to litigate because Hengen wouldn't do anything. Your claims were acknowledged by Deacon Phil Hengen. He never acknowledged anything to me in any form at any time. The last I heard from him was it was all my dad's fault, and he told me to read a book named called Good Enough, or Man Enough. The Archdiocese of St. Louis has never acknowledged anything. I've got the settlement agreement, if you haven't seen it. This basically denies everything. I don't know if you've seen this, but all the language is, I actually know the guy who wrote this, Kevin Cushing. He's a neighbor. My coach's daughter. This basically denies everything. So nobody's told me that it happened. Nobody's admitted that it happened. This meeting is the closest that I've come to an admission that it happened. And the fact that nobody will admit that is a problem, as I said, with my family and with Mary Queen of Peace. And here's a statement in the Aisha Sultan piece that came forward. This is what Gabe Jones said, result, as you know, with respect to my story. The big point being, you know, the information O'Leary shared changed multiple times. Well, that's not accurate. It especially, and I say that in part because when I met with the review team, May 9, 2011, headed up by Hengen, there were two lawyers there against the stated policy. The stated policy, in effect at the time, said no lawyers. There were two lawyers there, the Hugers, Bernie Huger, Christine Huger, were both at that meeting. Weren't supposed to be at that meeting. Ex-cop named Malachek, and then another psychologist, and then Hengen was there. They told me that they had no record of my 2002 conversations with Dolan or with the woman who I suspect was Nancy Brown. So if the first time I talked to the Archdiocese about this was, according to the best of your knowledge, was in May 2011, how can anyone say that my story changed if you only talked to me once? It doesn't make logical sense that if you only talked to me once, how can you say my story changed? You know, whatever. I would like to believe that Hengen lied to you. If he told you, you know, I told O'Leary that it happened. He never told me anything. Hengen never admitted it happened. He never said anything. The last communication I had with Hengen was read the book Man Enough by Frank Pittman, and then give me the name of your psychologist. I want to talk to your psychologist. I set that up. He never called my psychologist. Hengen is a terrible person. I don't know whether he's incompetent or what, but actually in 2013, I actually happened to know Monsignor Haneke, who was vicar of priests at the time, didn't know that, but I tried to go over Hengen's head to Monsignor Haneke, who I knew because I know a Monsignor outranks a deacon. Haneke turned out to be Hengen's boss. I went to Haneke and just told him what was going on. I said, Hengen's just stonewalling me. Can you do something about it? Haneke came back to me and said, no, you need to work with Hengen. But Hengen wasn't doing anything. So thus my frustration. And I just wanted to show you these so that you could have these. You know, this guy, I don't know, I haven't been in contact with these guys, but I suspect that he was abused because he fits the profile. He called me a couple weeks ago, told me a story of Valentine didn't get him as bad as Valentine got me, but there was, Valentine used the excuse that there was going to be a passion play. I don't have any recollection of a passion play at Immaculata. He was doing tryouts for a passion play, and he got a bunch of guys together. He had them take off their shirts, and then he took them into a bathroom so that he could examine them for defects, because if you were going to play the role of Christ, you can't have any defects. So that's one way that Valentine got access to guys. And then I ended up calling the next day, and it told me a story of being groped during wrestling, because I had a bunch of memories. Every day on the weekend, Valentine would have groups of guys together. I thought it was special because I thought it was a big deal, because he had me, he had us over one night. This would be fall of 77, fourth grade, to play Risk in the rectory. And he would teach us wrestling. Wrestling was his whole thing. And I've got this story that I told in the review meeting in 2011 where we would try to flip each other, and we would grab each other up here, and then Valentine would say, no, that's not how you do it. And he would have the boy leave, and then Valentine would do it, and he would end up grabbing us down here, and then his hand would accidentally slip, and he would grope us, and, you know. And had recently told me a couple weeks ago a similar story of Valentine wrestling, and Valentine was wrestling with him, and then his hand slipped, and was like, fuck that. I don't think he punched him, but he was going to punch him. But so just you know, kind of what kind of stuff is going on. And I'm going fast because we've only got half an hour. But so this is a mud cave, and this is another thing that Valentine would do, was he would take us, on trips, camping or caving or, you know, those kinds of things. And this is me. But that was how he got access to the guys. And then he would also have these parties on the weekend. And Dolan knew those parties were going on, and Monsignor Flavin knew those parties were going on. And I've talked to Sister Helen, who was our principal, and she and the other mothers knew what was going on, and Monsignor Flavin didn't respond. He was aware of the problems and didn't respond appropriately. He basically said, you know, if it's happening in the gym, it's none of your business. If it's happening in the rectory, it's none of your business. That was Monsignor Flavin's message to Sister Helen, Helen Petropoulos at Immaculata. I'm sure you don't know about some of this stuff, so I just wanted to, you know, I have a hard time believing that people could do what's been done and knowing it, and I'm like, all right, maybe he doesn't know, maybe she doesn't know, so I'm just going to kind of lay it out there and just let you know. And I'm in the process of talking to multiple members of the press, national press, international press, about this stuff. They're on the story. So just so you know, this is the kind of stuff that's out there and that's being investigated. I had whole problems in high school, ended up with a 1.8 in the first quarter. I know Carol Brescia more through, she's the assistance coordinator for the Jesuits UCS. I'm going through their process because I had some primary abuse at SLU, but I also had a lot of kind of flashbacks and that kind of stuff. Because eighth grade at Immaculata for me was actually really good because Valentine was gone and Dolan was gone. And I thought I was free. And then I get back to SLU, and then there are problems with the, you know, different priests and brothers and that kind of stuff at SLU. In the locker room, they had access to the locker room. So one question I had is my allegation in Valentine's file? I actually talked to Bishop Sticca, who said it wasn't, and he wasn't aware of it. You know, is it possible for me to see Valentine's file in a redacted form? I'd love to know that. Like I said, in the 2011 meeting, they told me that they had no knowledge of me, which implies or suggests that my allegation isn't in the file, isn't in Valentine's file. I have some suspicion that Dolan removed it in order to try to hide his own culpability. In which case, you guys can say, "Hey, we didn't know. Dolan hid you from us, and that's Dolan's problem." And I'm going to make sure people know about Dolan.
Yeah, let me just say it. The things that you just mentioned and the situation that happened many years ago,
mm-hmm.
I know nothing about.
Right.
I think what my role can be, though, is if we want to deal with the internal.
Well, I can. Let me just. I'm dealing with the internal on my own. I just want to make sure that you guys understand what life is like for a survivor. So 2002, I first talked to Dolan and I talked to Brown, and they told me nothing happened, and I was like fine with it. But then in 2003, my older son made his first confession. I had a panic attack. 2005, my older daughter made her first confession. I had a panic attack. And I'm like, does this mean anything? But, you know, Dolan told me nothing happened. Nancy Brown told me nothing happened. 2007, people described me as I had become catatonic and I was laid off from my job. That was the last kind of regular job I've had. In 2008, I had a PTSD episode when my ex-wife and kids went to Colorado, and it was PTSD, and I felt for the first time the urge to kill people, which obviously terrified me because I would never kill or harm or hurt anyone. I would sooner, if I felt any impulse towards one of you, I would throw myself out the window. So, you know, and that's why I know that allegations have been made against me that I've made terroristic threats against the Archdiocese. This Shrewsbury has a file with that heading.
Can I comment on that?
Yeah.
Okay, so we never, to my knowledge, called it a terroristic threat.
Okay, but that's fine. That's the name of the file of the investigation.
Also, I can do is say I'm sorry. What happened, we have employees in our building who are aware of your Twitter accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And saw some of the posts related to the rock salt and the shotgun thing,
mm-hmm.
which to me was very vague, but people were concerned. And, you know, we have 300 people in this building. We have security protocols, obviously. So we did ask them to just check in.
Right. Well, here's something that you could do to help me. Okay. I'm one of the reasons I'm being shunned by Mary Queen of Peace is that information has gotten out there. So people at Mary Queen of Peace are afraid that I made terroristic threats against you or the Archdiocese or someone. There are rumors at Mary Queen of Peace about that.
Part of our struggle, though, Chris, is that we don't, like, we have confidentiality and ethics and things that we can't necessarily just go out and talk about.
Either. Well, but I'm given... Well, and this is one of the things I talk about later. It would be nice, it would help me if you would admit that it happened. I'm willing to do a joint press conference to kind of clear the air. That would actually have some significant PR value to you. I think I had that letter. I don't know whether you've seen I'd be willing to do a joint press conference to some degree where we sit at the same table and say, you know, bad stuff happened in the past. We're trying to work it out. I would have to get things in return for that, but that would be value to both of us. You know, a press conference, even a press release, a letter or something, that would help me. Because, like I said, nobody at Mary Queen of Peace will talk to me because they're all scared of me. They think I'm lying because Gabe Jones said I was lying.
Who are these people then?
Everybody that I know at Mary Queen of Peace. Literally everybody. Nobody at Mary Queen of Peace will talk to me. They're all scared of me. They think I'm lying and they think I'm crazy. So, I'm just saying, this is the situation. You could help me out, you know. I talk about this on the third page of this. Let me just make sure I go through this stuff. 2009. So the whole terroristic threats thing, quotes, caused me problems because in 2008 I started having problems with PTSD that I've since found were PTSD, complex PTSD. And that just kind of set me off because I'd had these episodes that I'd controlled, and I controlled them basically by not leaving the house. But obviously that constrains me in terms of working, you know. And I've got unmanaged, untreated PTSD, and it's been this way since 2002, basically. 2011 at a minimum. So 2013, well, okay, and then another thing about 2002. Valentine resigned. And this is all before your time. This may be the first time you've heard of it. in late March 2002 as a result of a third guy who came forward at least, and I know who that is because we've talked a number of times and he's told me, Valentine resigned or was asked to resign, forced to resign. I was never contacted by anyone at the Archdiocese of St. Louis, this is all before your time, to say, hey, Chris, you know that stuff you told Bishop Dolan and Nancy Brown, maybe that was true. I wasn't informed that Valentine had resigned. I didn't actually learn about that until a couple months ago. So at a minimum, Dolan didn't call me back to let me know that Valentine had resigned. There was no press release or anything. A piece ran in the New York Times and the Southeastern Missourian. But, you know, I don't understand why in 2002 nobody circled back to me to say, okay, the stuff you told us and we told you that it didn't mean anything, well, maybe it meant something. That happened again in 2013 when Valentine was permanently removed. Nobody called me to let me know that that was going to happen. My psychologist at the time had to call me and warn me and say, okay, do you know what's in the paper, what's in the Post, and what's in the Riverfront Times? They just permanently removed Valentine. Nobody called me to warn me. Nobody called me to prepare me, to offer me help or anything. My psychologist had to do that, and that obviously, I hope, that just destroyed me. And then here's the other thing about that that destroyed me, is this statement that Hangen made. This is in the Riverfront Times. Valentine was permanently removed, blah, 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 due to the Archdiocese was, the allegation involved inappropriate touching of a minor and was first made to the Archdiocesan officials in the summer of 2012. I met with the Archdiocese in May of 2011. So, A, why am I not mentioned in this piece? And who came forward in 2012? Was it who came forward in 2012? This, I hope you can understand how this would absolutely destroy me. And this is the kind of stuff that I'm going to talk about with people. I will talk about this because this mess has to be cleaned up, first and foremost for the protection of kids, second to ensure that it doesn't happen again. Because I believe in the church. The reason I'm Catholic is because it's not just faith. I know a lot of Protestants and they're all about faith and I can just do whatever the hell I want as long as I've got faith. And the Catholics are, yeah, but you got to back that up with deeds. And I think that, you know, that's the right thing to do. That's Jesus right there. So I don't go to Mass anymore. I can't because of the flashbacks. But I still consider myself a Catholic because of the combination of faith and deeds. And I don't like the Protestants and they're just, you know, because there are too many of them are just about, you know, as long as I believe I could do whatever the hell I want to do. And the Catholics are, and that's the point of difference with the Catholics. The Catholics are like, no, not really, because your actions bring to life your faith. You know, and so you can't have this massive contradiction. Which is why the whole abuse thing kind of frustrates me. But I do not want to destroy the church. I do not want to destroy the Archdiocese. The church is beautiful. She's our mother. Always has been, always will be beautiful. But she's got cancer. Cancer doesn't change beauty. But cancer has to be removed. And this is the opportunity for the church, for you, for your brother bishops, to just say, okay, it sucked. It was bad. But we need to fix the problem. And I'm just here to say, I'm a survivor. I know the problem has to be fixed. A lot of terrible things were done to me. I need help. Whether you help or me or not is, you know, it's up to you. It's one of the reasons I signed the settlement agreement was to take this out of the realm of the legal into the realm of the moral. You know, I'm just telling you, I need help. But, you know, this is just to kind of close up aside from the way you can help. Well, and a couple other things. This was the mass of reparations. I was the person who was standing outside. Everybody ignored me. I understand how that happened. It was a terrible thing to do, but it happened. One other thing that affected me a lot was The Matrix, which was released in January 2014. I don't know how much of this you know about, but... Okay, well, and that's why I'm here, because I assume you may not know. Number one, accused individual number 107 is Valentine. I know that because of the three settlements that were made based on allegations in 85, those are the Scorfinas. My allegation isn't in the matrix, which is a problem because if you haven't seen it, this is, we're talking about, I'm not a lawyer, but this sounds to me like perjury and obstruction of justice. And you could be on the hook for that. So this may be something that you want to look into. Just some details about Valentine's line entry. And I don't have a problem believing that you don't know about all this stuff, that some of this stuff was hidden from you. I don't have a problem believing that. I find that completely plausible. And I'd be willing to say so publicly. But the reason I'm here is to let you know this is the stuff that has been done. I'm going to talk about it because it has to be talked about, because this is just the cancer that's inside the church. The cancer has to be removed, but in order to remove the cancer, you have to identify it and expose it. But this is the kind of stuff that's going to be talked about, and I'm just here to present you. I'm a survivor. I'm pissed, but I'm trying to move beyond that. And, you know, and it's Easter, so let's embrace Easter, you know. It would be helpful to me if you publicly admitted it happened, that I didn't make terroristic threats in some form, letter, press release, press conference. Financial assistance would be very helpful for the kids in terms of college. You know, Laura doesn't have any savings. I don't have any savings. I'm completely bankrupt. Like I said, I've got like $25 to my name. So that's just my situation. These are the facts. These are what's going to happen. I'm going to talk about this because I have to, in order to ensure that A, kids are safe, and B, that the cancer is exposed and removed. So I'm just here, but I'm trying to follow the message of Christ and to do what I believe Christ would do. So that's just, you know.
Well, first of all, I appreciate the fact you're here.
Right. And I appreciate your meeting with me.
And be happy to meet with you again.
Right.
None of this I've ever seen.
Right.
So, and obviously, I'll take a look.
Right. And that was the main thing I wanted to do, was make sure that you were aware of all the stuff that had been done by the Archdiocese, not necessarily by you or in your name or anything, but this is what's out there. So, you know, I find it completely plausible that, you know, you're a man of God. You're mostly focused on the God stuff. You delegate a lot of this stuff to other people. I just wanted to make sure that you were aware of the stuff that had been done.
But just so you know, I'm happy to see you again. My focus, obviously I look at all this,
mm-hmm.
but my focus is the individual, the human being.
Right.
What you've been talking about here for the last half hour or so is painful.
Right.
Hurtful.
Right.
And so...
And I appreciate that, but just so you understand, and I'm trying to make sure the church understands, there are practical implications to abuse. PTSD, anxiety, depression, this is all stuff I've been diagnosed with. PTSD, complex PTSD, anxiety, depression, obsessive compulsive disorder, that all takes money to fix, takes money to medicate, takes money to treat, it affects your ability to, you know, for employment, all those kinds of things. So there are very practical consequences of abuse, and I just want to make sure that you understand that. And if that's all the time we got, then that's, you know, I've accomplished what I hope to. I appreciate the time, you know.
And hopefully we'll meet again.
Yep, I'd like to. All right, is that time?
Any questions?
Well, you've got my email. If you got anything you want to follow up, just let me know.
Okay.
Good.
And next time, if you have to get here, I'm going to take you up and take a look.
I will. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, please. I can send you an email with a name. Yeah.
Okay, that'd be helpful.
Yeah. Because some of them are doing okay, some of them are not. Some are not as well. I think I got the worst of it, but, you know. Thank you very much. Appreciate the time and the offer. Yeah, this is not fun. I can handle it. Just one floor down?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Yep. And I'll send you an email with those names of those guys.